Here we go. For our theme today, we're going to press the same direction that our morning studies are directing us. And the morning was more specific in why do the wicked flourish or prosper. But the underlying principle there is having an eternal perspective so that we can deal with things in this life that seem to be kind of out of balance, that seem to not make sense. And for some, it's the idea that wicked people actually have good things happen to them. What do you think would be the outcome if it was just those who do good get good and those who do bad get bad? How many people would strive for the bad? Nobody, all right? Because everybody wants good. And so this morning we were talking about that. If it was just about the good and the bad, it wouldn't be about loving God. It'd just be about give me the good. And so I'll do whatever good you want me to do so I get good results. And so Asaph was there in Psalm 73 like, this is driving me insane. Why are these people prevailing and why are we suffering? But that verse 17, that's a beautiful verse, isn't it? It says, it's then that I went to the house of the Lord or the sanctuary of God that I learned their destiny. I was reminded of what awaits them and what awaits me. And so with that in mind, we're going to pursue a thought here. We're going to call the best is yet to come. You believe that? All right, not just in light of today. You know, sometimes we look around and we get as discouraged as those who don't believe in God. And we talk about the world like people who have no hope. It's not going to get any better. It's always going to get worse. And it's just, we're just as much of a naysayer or Mr. or Mrs. Pessimism as anybody that doesn't believe. Right? We've got to be different than that if we really believe that the best is yet to come. Now, how many of you identify that as a song? The best is yet to come. I'm not going to sing it all, right? You remember who sang that song? Mr. Frank Sinatra. Okay, so when we're talking about the best is yet to come, like you weren't even there, so I shouldn't have went there, but I think of that song, and so I just wanted to throw that out there. We're not going to talk about Mr. Frank or his singing. We're going to talk today about having an eternal perspective, like having a view of things yet to come and letting that view really influence the way that we do life here today, because it should. So to start with, I want to ask you a question, and feel free to be open and honest here together in our gathering here. So, if we knew that today was our last day on the planet, so in about 12 hours and 40 minutes, let's say at midnight, we were going to check out. So we've got 12 hours and 40 minutes roughly left of this day. Would any of your plans change for the remainder of this day? Would you do anything different throughout the rest of your afternoon than you would if you thought you had the rest of maybe the week or the, you know, many, many, many years to come? Would you do anything different? Anybody? If you knew today was your last day, would you do anything different than you're planning to do? All right, so some are saying yes, some saying no. So let me just put some examples to you. Would you go home and cook or would you go out to eat? Yeah, if you go out to eat, so somebody else is doing the dishes, right? Yeah, just leave them in the sink, right? I know better than that. They'd get cleaned. Yeah. And so maybe you'd go out to eat, or maybe you wouldn't. Maybe your plans would change, or maybe you think, I'd rather eat at home than anywhere else anyway, so we're just going to go home and do things like we normally do. Would you go home and watch football this afternoon? All right, so if that's your plan, maybe you would. If it's not your plan, obviously you wouldn't. Or maybe you'd change your plans. Maybe you're planning on spending a few hours just laying on a couch watching a ball game. Or maybe you weren't. What about taking a nap? You know, they say Sunday afternoons are good napping days. Especially today, it's kind of cool. Be a little bit overcast. It just looks like a good napping kind of day. So if you knew that you only had 12 hours and 40 minutes left to this day, would you go home and take a nap? No, I think we would probably change that, right? So maybe you're not planning to do that anyway, or maybe you were. What about yard work? Well, this is the time of year leaves are falling, and you've got your fall plants that just are kind of losing their color. We've had frost a little bit, and so maybe you're planning to go outside and snip some of those things back or do some mowing or mulching in your yard. Would you still do that if you thought that this was your last day? That wouldn't work at all. How many of you would still be here? Don't answer that. If I only had 12 hours and 40 minutes left, and you knew that for sure, you might just get up and walk out of here, right? You say, I've heard this guy for 12 years or however long, so I'm headed to a better place. I'm going to go spend my time maybe a little bit differently. Or maybe you wouldn't. Maybe you find the value that is there in the church and you would say, this is where I want to be, right? This is how I would like to spend my last time here together. So what we're going to see here from Peter is that there are some ways that we should live if the best really is yet to come. If there's something that's awaiting us, it should influence the way that you and I live here today. So if I were willing to change plans, that could be good or that could be bad. You know, if I was willing to waste my day and I thought, well, this is all I've got left, I'm not going to waste it, that can be a good transition of my day. But it could be maybe, you know, I usually Sunday afternoon, evening, for me, I'm preparing for my next week of teaching. And so I'm laying out my outline. I'm getting ready for that. And so if I knew midnight I was checking out, I wouldn't take the time to do that. So I'd probably spend that a little differently. And that's not bad necessarily. But what we'll look at this morning, maybe some of the ways that we're intentionally living simply don't reflect that we really believe the best is yet to come. So if you've got a Bible, we're going to go to 2 Peter. 2 Peter is a good little letter. It's a good letter for Free Will Baptists. But bigger than that, it's going to prove to be good here today as we think about letting what's eternal affect what is now current. So here you've got Peter writing to some first century Christians, and that was his intention. You know, the Bible tells us that men were moved by God. This wasn't from their own will. They were moved by God to write down different things that turned into letters that were then transferred from church to church. I just wonder if when Peter was writing, if he thought 1,000 years from now, 2,000 years from now, people are going to read this and it's going to be very helpful for them. So you've got this inspiration of the Word of God, Peter dealing with his current generation. You've got the preservation of the Word of God, which means what I inspired for those first century Christians is just as accurate, just as helpful for people like you and I here today. So 2 Peter 3, and we're going to read verse 1 through 14, but he's writing with a purpose. And you'll find it all throughout 2 Peter. And what he says is, I'm writing to remind you of these things. I'm going to pass off the scene. I've been teaching you, but I want to put some things down so that when I'm gone, you'll be able to remind yourself and one another of these truths. So if the best really is yet to come, he's going to tell us, live your life in such a way that reflects that truth. And so let's go here. 2 Peter chapter 3, we're going to go verse 1 through verse 14. He says, Beloved, I now write to you this second epistle, in both of which I stir up your pure minds by way of reminder, that you may be mindful of the words which were spoken before by the holy prophets and the commandment of us, the apostles of the Lord and Savior, knowing this first, that scoffers will come in the last days, walking according to their own lusts and saying, Where is the promise of his coming? For since the fathers fell asleep, all things continue as they were from the beginning of creation. For this they willfully forget that by the word of God the heavens were of old and the earth standing out of water and in the water, by which the world that then existed perished, being flooded with water. But the heavens and the earth which are now preserved by the same word are reserved for fire until the day of judgment and perdition of ungodly men. But, beloved, do not forget this one thing, that with the Lord one day is as 1,000 years and 1,000 years as one day. So the Lord is not slack concerning his promise, as some count slackness, but he's long-suffering toward us, not willing that any should perish, but that all should come to repentance. Verse 9 sounds like, to me, everybody on the planet can be saved. Good doctrine. Verse 10, But the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in which the heavens will pass away with a great noise, and the elements will melt with fervent heat. Both the earth and the works that are in it will be burned up. Therefore, since all these things will be dissolved, what manner of persons ought you to be in holy conduct and godliness, looking for and hastening the coming of the day of God, because of which the heavens will be dissolved, being on fire, and the elements will melt with fervent heat. Nevertheless, we, according to his promise, look for the new heavens and a new earth in which righteousness dwells. Therefore, beloved, looking forward to these things, be diligent to be found by him in peace, without spot and blameless. And we'll stop at that point there this morning. But a few things I want to highlight as it relates to understanding if the best really is yet to come, then that should influence how we live. And so we'll say it this way, in light of eternity, okay? In light of eternity, in light of what Peter is writing about, how should we live? What are some things that we should take away as it relates to our theme here? And so three things we'll note this morning. The first is this, in light of eternity, live your life with a purpose, and that purpose is going to be a God-sized purpose. So live your life in such a way that reflects there is a God and that you are reflective of Him. Now, what are some different purposes that people live their life for? There's a bunch of them. Why do people wake up and do what they do? So one could be money. They live the way that they live to get enough money to satisfy the lifestyle they want to live. Why else do people do what they do? Okay, so we've got habit, so we've just become a creature of our routine. Anybody else, a different reason? People wake up and they live for, I think some people wake up and live for their family. And so that's the intention, that's what drives them. And so it's a spouse or it's a child or it's a parent. And so they're moved or motivated or compelled to do what they do because of their family. Some people live to satisfy their pleasures or their desires. And so they're going to indulge in anything that makes them happy. And they're not going to invest their money or time in anything that takes away from that. Some people live to rule the world, right? We've got that going on right now. Groups of people taking over countries because their end goal is that they're going to reign and rule the entire planet. That's why they wake up. That's why they do what they do. So all sorts of purposes, all sorts of reasons to be alive. Here Peter's going to outline very clearly, though, what our driving force should be. And it's here about this verse 11 and 12. We're going to see this living with godly purpose. Here's what he says, 2 Peter 3, verse 11. Since everything will be destroyed in this way, what kind of people ought you to be? And so he begs the question in his own statement. You ought to live holy and godly lives as you look forward to the day of God and speed its coming. And so here in Peter's response, or in here in Peter's answer, he's implying there is a way to live. If there is eternity and it's going to come, then there is a way that you should live. So what way is it? He's going to talk here about the idea of being holy and of being godly. People are in pursuit of holiness and godliness. So some of your translations will use the word conduct instead of holy, and that word there can be a parallel word, which means the way we conduct ourselves should reflect the character and nature of God. And so this morning we've sang a song, Refiner's Fire, dealing with our hearts. We want Him to refine us to make us what? Holy. Okay, and so here Peter's saying that would make sense. That lines up with the Scriptures. In light of eternity, strive for, conduct yourself in a way that reflects that you are holy. So I'm set apart, I'm living my life for God, I'm going to conduct myself in a manner that reflects His character. So holiness here is a reference to the way we do life. And so conduct yourselves with holiness and godliness, or have this godly purpose. So holiness is the way, godliness is the why. So you've got the way of your purpose, you've got the why you do what you do. And when you put those two together here, Peter writes and says, it's because this is our driving purpose. Now, one thing Peter makes clear here is what drives that purpose. What is behind it? What is the push behind you and I striving to be holy or to be godly? What's he say it is? He says it three different times. He says it's about looking forward. It's about looking forward. And so thinking about if the best is yet to come, what he's saying is that should then give you and I fuel to live our life as a godly purpose. So we've got to have our eyes up thinking about things that are yet to come. This time of year, thinking basketball, coaching girls and boys, you'll say it a lot and you'll hear it a lot if you're ever at a game. Get your eyes where? Up. Get your eyes up. Quit looking at the floor. Quit looking at the ball. Get your eyes up. And so that's the concept here. We're looking forward. We're anticipating, we're expecting, we're watchful. There's something good that's just on the horizon. If the best is yet to come, then that should grant us, or compel us rather, to be people who are driven with godly purpose. So, think of it this way. What are you looking forward to currently in your life? What's one thing that you are looking forward to? Okay, so if somebody's working, it could be retirement. You're not looking forward to that anymore, right? Nope. Been there, done that. Doing that, rather. Somebody else, what are you looking forward to? Usually you don't have to think about this, because if we're looking forward to something, it means that we are excited. We're watchful. We're expectant. So what are you looking forward to? Nothing? You don't? Oh, except for the eternal. Okay, so is it the best? Okay, and if in your mind you think you're a little bit closer to it than maybe somebody else, will that make you excited, looking forward to it? Kind of. All right, trying to figure it out. Yes. Movie night, okay? So Lucy's looking forward to the movie night tonight. Listen, you don't have to be all super spiritual, okay? I know you're sitting here trying to come up with something real godly. Maybe you're looking forward to lunch, okay? Maybe you've got a good lunch on the calendar there on the plan. Anybody else, something you're looking forward to? Yes. Oh, lunch? Okay. Oh, rice and gravy. Yeah, she's got her mind on lunch. Thank you, my child. All right, so the things that we look forward to, we make plans for, don't we? The things that we're looking forward to that excite us, we invest in. So let's say that we were looking forward to a vacation next summer. What are some things that we're going to do? So we're going to make some plans. So we're going to start socking away some money. Or maybe it means we're going to pay down some bills so that we can have some money to be able to take that trip. And then we're going to plan like where we're going, how we're getting there, what we're going to do while we're there. And we're going to tell people about it, right? Usually we don't sneak off somewhere because we're excited. And so it's something that we share. So when we're looking forward to something, it breeds enthusiasm, excitement, gladness, just like, I can't wait for that. Or maybe it's like graduation. You know, you've got that point where you're just like, I'm ready to get out of school and I'm looking forward to graduating. Or it could be, I'm looking forward to retirement. But those things that we look forward to, we're excited about. And so Peter writes here with this just implied. If the best really is yet to come, then what should be our attitude towards it? We should be excited about it, right? We should look forward to it. We sing these songs today about one day he's coming. Oh, what? Glorious day. Oh, Lord, haste the day when my faith will be sight. Clouds are going to roll back. I know what the Bible says. Trump's going to sound. It's well. Amen. That's the way I sang. I'm not talking about you. If we're really believers that the best is yet to come, if we're really looking forward to that, then there will be excitement, there will be enthusiasm, it will breed within us, it will compel us to live our lives in such a way here. And if it's just rhetoric or knowledge, it's just Christian fact, it's cold hard truth, it has no influence over my life, then my life will demonstrate that. How I worship, how I invest my time, how I talk with people about the Lord, these sorts of things all are proven simply by how we do life. And so how long has it been since the thought of heaven excited you? How long has it been since you were just like up on your toes, like you just couldn't wait to experience that? And I understand our nature is to fight for life here. You remember the illustration of the golden rope? We had a rope here this last spring that was up behind this little table here, about 50 feet of it. And at the end of it, there was some duct tape, about 3 or 4 inches. And so the duct tape was a reference to our life. The rest of that gold rope represented our life here on this planet. The rest of that rope represented our life in eternity. And so maybe you remember that, maybe you don't. But so often, you know, in this little 4-inch group, we live here so we can do something here. And we live here and we make plans for here. It's like, I'm going to work hard for 40 or 50 years so I can live well this much of my life without thinking at all about the whole rest of that rope. I mean, when I look at that, that looks what? Yeah, just lots of good adjectives there, right? It's short. It's meaningless. It makes me look like me. It makes me look like a fool. Why live so much of my time preparing for this without living my life in view of all that? Right? If there really is a heaven, if Jesus really is coming back, then that should be an exciting thought for the Christian. And that should give them purpose to how we live our life here, how we invest our life here. And so instead of saying, I don't know what we'll do today, I don't know, let's just run around and waste the day. No, let's invest the day. Let's invest this day and let's make it something that matters forever. So being watchful, looking forward is a big deal. To say it simpler might be to say it like this. What we're looking for should inspire what we're living for. What we're looking for should inspire what we're living for. So to live our lives here in ways that matter, we need to have that eternal perspective. If the best is yet to come, man, let's let our lives demonstrate that. All right. Secondly here, in light of eternity, not only are we going to have these lives that are living full of God's purpose, but we're going to find that sin is going to lose its luster. Sin is going to lose its luster. So how many of you are tempted by sin? Anybody been tempted recently? You want to just share that with us? No, you probably don't, right? So we're tempted in all sorts of ways, all right? So to do things maybe that aren't that bad or to do some things that really just are impure or unholy, we just don't want any part of it at all, and it's like, why is that even on my radar? Why am I thinking that way? Well, here what Peter is going to tell us is that when our eyes are on things that are eternal, when the best is still yet to come, what's going to happen for the believer is sin's going to lose its luster. Anybody want that? You know what that word luster means? It's like something that has a shine. It has almost like its own life, like you look at it and it just kind of draws you in. You know, you think maybe of a diamond ring that's just beautiful and it just sparkles. It's got bling all over and it just kind of draws your attention to it. Right? It's just has a luster to it, has a shine, has a glow. Well, here Peter's going to tell us sin will lose its luster in view or in light of eternity. And so when I have a godly purpose, I'm less likely to give in to temptation. You know, that word purpose implies that I'm steadfast after something. I've got a goal that I've set out there, and I'm going to press on towards it. So we've probably all at some point in our life maybe been on try to diet. You ever try to diet? I don't mean like try to diet drink. I mean you've tried to diet to, you know, maybe go down a size or whatever. You've tried to eat healthier, maybe to take better care of yourself. And so we've had a purpose of dieting, right? Now what comes along when you have a diet? All right, so you've got exercise that goes with it, so we're trying to do that. What comes along to hinder that diet? Halloween is coming. Yeah, that's right. So we get a craving. We get a temptation, right? And so if my mind is not focused, if I'm not purposed, then I'm like, oh, these are many Snickers. And so I can eat maybe 7 or 8 of these because they're many. They don't add up to a whole lot of calories. Or I'll just eat it. I'll just indulge this one time. And so we eat that one time, and then the next night we're back with the same spoon and the same gallon of ice cream in front of the same TV. Like, you know, maybe you don't eat that way, but you understand what I'm saying. Where there's no purpose, then we're willing to indulge. However, where there's a purpose, listen, I'm going to get in this kind of shape. I'm going to be this kind of size. I'm going to lose this kind of weight. I'm going to be healthy in this sort of way. Then when I'm faced with that temptation, I say what? No. I'm not going to do that because it doesn't help me accomplish my goal. Where there's purpose, there's focus. Where there's a lack of purpose, there's a lack of focus. And that's when sin starts to get really attractive. Sin starts to get really appealing. It gets desirable. It almost gets to the point where we can justify it as Christians, as though we need it. And it's really not that bad. And if it's just this one time and it helps me out, I think it's okay. Don't you think it's okay, God? Remember that in our video this week? Like God's looking over our shoulder, seconding, agreeing with our sin. You think that's right, don't you? Oh, yeah, that's good for you. No, it doesn't work that way. And so Peter's trying to help us out here. It will lose its luster if we stay focused on things that are eternal. If we don't, we're more susceptible to Satan's attack. Let's read it. Verse 14, 2 Peter 3. So then, dear friends, since you're looking forward to this, make every effort to be found spotless, blameless, and at peace with Him. And so when our goals are these things right here, when my goal is to be spotless, blameless, and at peace with God, I'm going to live in such a way and I'm going to desire things that are going to help make that become a reality. So when I'm faced with that temptation, I'm going to say no, because it's not helping me become godly. When I'm having that thought that says, just dwell here for a while, I'm going to say no, because it's not going to produce something in me that's holy. See, I'm here to live in such a way that reflects God. The best is yet to come, so I'm not living temporarily. Remember we read in our reading this morning, our sights are not set on what is seen, but on what is what? Unseen, because what is seen is temporary. What is unseen lasts for how long? Forever. It's eternal. So when we are purposed, when we are compelled, we are less likely to find ourselves giving in to sin. When my desire is for things that last forever, sin will lose its luster and appeal. And I start to look at it the way that God does. I start to hate it. And we talked here maybe 6 weeks ago about it's appropriate for us to hate the things that God hates. It's right for us to hate sin. It's right for me to hate my adversary and his work to try to influence me or to overcome me. It's right for me to hate that. And so here we see it's going to lose its luster. It's going to lose its appeal as my heart is more compelled to live the way that God has designed. There's a book written by Randy Alcorn. It's a book called Heaven. If you read it, he talks about his different views of heaven. But here's one of the things that he says as it relates to what we're talking about here. He says, picture on your calendar that you're getting married, okay? And you've got that wedding date set there. Maybe it's a couple weeks out. When your mind is focused on that spouse-to-be, and you're excited about him or her, you know what you're less susceptible to at that point? Being seduced. Being drawn away to somebody that you don't know. To have an experience with somebody that just lasts shortly compared to something that's going to last forever. And so when that's on the calendar, this is what I'm after, I'm just not as likely to give in to that temptation. And so he's going to relate that to our view of heaven. Listen to what he says here. He says, when I've meditated on heaven, sin is not terribly appealing. It's when my mind drifts from heaven that sin seems attractive. Thinking of heaven leads inevitably to pursuing holiness. And our high tolerance for sin testifies of our failure to prepare for heaven. And so it's the idea where I am willing to indulge in any sort of sin or to participate in any sort of sin, it's indicative that my mind is not focused on what is the best that's yet to come. Because I'm enjoying it. It's got its appeal. And what I have lost is something that's going to last forever. He goes on to say, heaven should affect our activities and ambitions, recreation, friendships, the way we spend our time and money, on and on. If I believe I'll spend eternity in a world of unending beauty and adventure, will I be content to spend all my evenings staring at game shows, sitcoms, and ball games? Even if I keep my eyes off of impurities, how much time will I want to invest in what does not matter? And the answer is zero time. Zero time. Where there's a purpose, where there's a goal, what we're striving after, when we're focused on things that are yet to come in light of eternity, we're less likely to sin. Now, that doesn't mean that sin can no longer be a reality in our life. It just means that it's not as desirable. It's not what I want to happen. Therefore, when that door opens, I close it. When that mindset goes there, I shut it down. Nope, not today. My mind are focused on things eternal. You need to go elsewhere. You're not going to bother me with that. Whatever it is, lust, pride, worry, fear, you name it, you throw it out there, the devil's working to deceive us, and when I get my eyes on things that last forever, it's just not as pretty. It's just not as attractive. I'm just not as willing to indulge. So it loses its desire. Sin loses its luster in light of eternity. And then third and last here this morning, if the best is yet to come, then in light of eternity, suffering and evil are going to be put in their proper place. Suffering and evil will be put in their proper place, and we're talking about while we live here. So a few weeks ago, we talked about living in an evil world. Do you remember that? We outlined a lot of things that we would call evil. Even in our life groups, Mr. Stanley outlined things that were evil. Even people that don't believe, he said, you look at that and you define that as evil, like it's something that is beyond the heart of just a person. So what happens to you the more that you experience evil? What happens to us the more that we're around and influenced by wickedness? Ma'am? Okay, so we become complacent. What did you say, Miss Wanda? We accept it as though it's just the way it's going to be, and okay. When's the last time you talked positively about your country? About our country's leaders, or about the current situation of our economy, or about the world, and you think about powers that be. When's the last time we've had a positive conversation about that? Right, I'm not trying to put you on the spot or make you feel guilty. All we're trying to do is put suffering and evil and wickedness in its proper perspective. Put it in its proper place. See, if my focus is there, more often than not, what happens is we get burdened down. We get beat down. We get discouraged, almost to the point of despair. Now, I'm not suggesting that we can live here without experiencing the heaviness of wickedness. Okay, we can't insulate ourselves in such a way where we're in this holy bubble and nothing evil affects us. We were talking this morning just about how people are fleeing their country because they're being oppressed. And we go out and say, oh, I'll have a large pepperoni, please. And hey, you want to go play a game tonight? Let's just go goof off. What are you going to do? And we live in a world that's so far from that we act like sometimes that's not even going on. Or like I have no interest in it because it's not directly affecting me. So that's not how we're supposed to live. We're not to shut ourselves out, nor are we supposed to be consumed by it, but it should have its proper place. And so let's go here to 2 Peter 3. Let's look at verse 13. As people who believe the best is yet to come, our response should be, we won't despair. Remember, Paul says we grieve just like everybody else. We shed tears when people die, but we don't grieve as those who have no hope. Have you heard that Stephen Curtis Chapman song, "We Can Grieve with Hope"? We can cry with hope. We can say goodbye with hope because we know our goodbye is not the end. And we can grieve with hope because we believe with hope there's a place where we'll see your face again. It's a song that's often sung at funerals. Right? We don't grieve as those who have no hope. We don't look at this world as people who do not understand that the best is yet to come. And so in verse 13, here's what he says. But in keeping with his promise, we are looking forward to a new heaven and a new earth where righteousness dwells. And so here we've got this picture that suffering and evil is put in its proper place. Will there be evil in eternity in heaven? No. You want to encourage your heart, go read Revelation 21 and 22. Read how it ends. You know what you find in verse 3 of Revelation 22? There is no more curse. There is no more curse. Man, that's just good news to me. I'm sick of the curse. I'm sick of its influence in my life or in my family or in the families of our church or in this world. You just get fed up. I hate sin. I hate our adversary. I hate ruined marriages. You talk with people here whose lives are just falling apart because they've got their eyes off things eternal and they've been seduced by things that should have no luster. I'm sick of it. I'm fed up with sin. And here, Revelation 22 says, there will be no curse there. You know, we have no idea what a world without a curse will be like. Zero. I mean, we can think we do, and we can read Revelation 21, and it talks about, you know, John says things are like this. Things are like this. It doesn't necessarily mean they are that. It means this is the only way I can describe it. This is my vocabulary trying to put into words what I'm looking at. Streets of gold. Doesn't mean they're streets of gold. He says it's like it. That's what it looks like. There's a wall around this city, and it's got a foundation that's like 12 foundations on top of one another, and they're all made out of like what looks like jewels. And there's this awesome wall, and this city's just amazing. There's this sea that looks like crystal. And if you could just see it, it would just blow your mind. He's so overwhelmed by it. He's just so taken back by it. I have no idea what a world without a curse could ever look like. I don't fully know how to comprehend or to grasp that. All I know is that I want it. That's where I want to be. Revelation 22, after that, goes on to say, there will be no crying, there will be no sorrow, there will be no heart, none of that stuff, no heartache, no brokenness, none of that stuff's going to be in heaven. We have a hard time understanding what a world like that would be like, and yet at the same time, we have a desire for that. See, when our eyes are fixed on what is yet to come, we don't get satisfied or just complacent or just like, this is how it's going to be. We know it's going to be better. We know it's going to be better. You remember Miss Corrie Ten Boom quoted here 2 or 3 weeks ago. She was talking about her current situation, and she said, in this concentration camp, what I know is that, one, my God is with me, and that what he has reserved for me is better than this. So I'll endure it. I'll go through this. Because remember that rope, it's just this. It's just this amount of time compared to forever. Paul was a guy who experienced a lot of heartache and trials here on this planet, trying to follow Jesus. And based on what was ahead of him, he still had hope. He still had confidence. He still spoke encouragement. And so here's what he says, Romans 8:18, I consider that our present sufferings are not worth comparing with the glory that will be revealed in us. He says something similar in 2 Corinthians. He's like, let's weigh out our struggles, let's weigh out our hardships, and let's put the glory and splendor of heaven in this one. How will that scale tilt? Is it just kind of teetering a little bit? Oh, it'd be a little bit better. No, it would be like a catapult. You know, there's no way to remotely compare what is yet to come with even your suffering, even our heartache. And so it's got to put that in our minds. We've got to have the right perspective about our difficulty. Suffering should not prevail in the mind and heart of a Christian. It should be hope. Despair should not be present there in the life of a Christian. It should be this strength and courage and power and confidence because we know the best is yet to come. And if we believe it, then live like it. If we don't believe it, you know what? We'll also live like it. And we'll talk about how bad it is, how much worse it's going to get. I just can't believe it. And we'll go around like Eeyore Christians. Oh. The best is yet to come. And that helps me put suffering, wickedness, evil in its proper place because I don't want to deal with that anymore. So Paul knew about suffering. Peter knew about suffering, and so he writes these words here, and he says, I want to remind you of this. You remind each other of this. Don't let loose of this. There is a day coming, and God's going to destroy it, and he's going to make it new. There is this day, and Jesus is coming back. Keep that in perspective, and let that be the lens that you see everything that's happening in this world through. And so Peter was not discouraged by the state of the world he was living in. So you've got Jewish people who are being, Jewish Christians who are being persecuted, who are being driven out. Peter says later he knew what his death was. He knew what was coming for him. And yet he didn't write from a position of discouragement or despair. He wrote as someone who says the best is yet to come. And so knowing that, he could write from that position. Peter was the guy who went in with John into the temple preaching. You remember this? And the religious leaders were sick of the Jesus message. We crucified this man, he's dead, now let it go. And all these people are starting to follow Peter and John, and the religious leaders pull them in and say, listen, we're not having this anymore. So here's what's going to happen. We're going to flog you, we're going to throw you out of the city, and you're not to speak this name anymore. Don't preach this Jesus anymore. And these men said, well, decide for yourself what you will. For us, we're going to honor God. We're going to obey God over man. And so these men were flogged. They were thrown out of the city gates. They were told to never preach again. The Bible says they went on their way how? It's an R word, and it ends with ejoicing. They went on their way rejoicing because they had been counted worthy to suffer. And so they're telling people what happened. You know what they do? They march right back into that city, and what do? Hey, let me tell you about Jesus Christ. Let me tell you about the one who you crucified. Let me tell you that I've seen his hands, I've seen his side, and he's resurrected. And these guys don't want us telling you this story anymore, but look, we've been beaten. We're back here to tell you the story because we believe the best is yet to come. So they think, no, you just live this way. No, we say, no, we're living this way, right? We're going to live with this eternal perspective. We're not going to be beat down by suffering. We're not going to be told we can't preach. We're not going to let punishment or consequence affect what we're going to do, whether we're going to honor God or obey God or not. He was beaten. They were beaten. And yet they went right back in and preached the same gospel message. See, for me, they had it in its proper perspective. Could you do that? Could you be flogged and beaten and told don't preach again and go back and preach again? It'd be hard, wouldn't it? I mean, we'd probably just start to justify, well, you know, I shouldn't go back there. I shouldn't stir up trouble. It's just going to make them not believe. It's going to push them farther from God. And I'm not saying God would ask us or not ask us to do that. I'm saying for these guys, that was their mission. And they were doing it regardless of the consequence because they knew the best was yet to come. Wasn't it Paul who said to live is Christ and to die is? Really? To die is gain. Putting evil, suffering, wickedness in its proper place takes place when we look at what is yet to come. In light of eternity, it helps me see clearly. And what I like here in verse 13, it's not because a pastor says so. It's not because somebody writes a book about heaven, their view of it, that makes it so. It's based on the promise of God. God says this is how it's going to be. God says this is what you'll experience. And so we look forward with confidence and hope to our eternity, not letting the current influence kind of negativity over our lives here. The best is yet to come. So with that in mind, as we close here, I just want to ask you a few questions. I want you to think, maybe evaluate your life here in prayer as it relates to eternity. So here it is. What about how you and I are currently living makes sense in light of eternity? What about how you and I are currently living makes sense in light of eternity, but maybe it doesn't make sense to people who live here? What are we doing that looks foolish in the world's view, but makes complete sense in light of eternity? Now, the Bible talks about you and I being generous with the resources that we have. And so we collect an offering here. Not because it's what churches do, it's because it's what God says. You know what people outside these walls would say? That's foolish. What are you giving your money to? You've worked hard for that. I mean, just think about it. Whether it's a small amount or a large amount, doesn't matter. It's you could do something else with that than just give it away. In their eyes, they've got a partly correct perspective. You're only here for a short time, and that's true. But it's not when you're dead, you're done. Although they would say, live like. Don't give your money away. You've worked hard for that. You've got your degree in that. You've earned that. What are you giving it away for? Are we forgiving? I don't mean like, are we for it or against it? I mean, are we forgiving? You know, when somebody's wronged you and you go back to them and you say, hey, I forgive you for that. The world doesn't know what to do with that. The world knows how to hold grudges. The world knows how to just to hang on to heartache. The world knows how to shut people out and to close the door. You'll never get close to me again. You'll never hurt me again. I'm done with you. You're dead to me. And the Christian walks in and goes, I forgive you. Our news outlets didn't know what to do with that. When those people from that Bible study in South Carolina got on the air and said, we forgive this young man. That got about this much coverage because they don't know how to cover it. That doesn't make sense. He just walked in and shot the place up, and you're saying you forgive him? That's right. That's what we're saying. We don't condone his actions. We think there should be justice and consequences here. But we don't hold a grudge against this man. We will forgive him. See, that makes sense in light of eternity. That makes us look like fools in the world's eye. Are we giving? Are we forgiving? What about surrendered? Are we surrendered? Are we following Jesus? You know, the world says that's foolish. You live your life. Be a self-made man, self-made woman. Set your dreams and goals out there. You go chase it. Whatever your ambition is, go after it. Why are you following the teaching of a dead man? Because we believe the best is yet to come. And we believe how we live here. Jesus says in Revelation, he says, I'm coming back. And you know what I'm coming back with? I'm coming back with my rewards. And I'm going to pass them out. Everybody that's done well, I'm going to bless them. I'm ready to distribute rewards. Now, we don't live for the reward. We live for our God, but that's just what he says is coming. We have an eternal perspective. And so we live for things that last forever. You know, I read this week from a man who said, eternity is a long time to store up treasure on earth. The Bible says store up your treasure where? Heaven. Eternity is a long time to store it up here. What he was saying is, why invest so much here and not think about things that last forever? Are you surrendered? Are you following? Maybe you're here today and you're struggling with something. Are you burdened with something? Are you doing it with hope? Are you going through this kind of dark valley in your life? Are you doing it with hope? Are you doing it with the hand of God? Are you letting him walk you through it? Remember, David wrote and said, Lord's my shepherd, and he's going to go with me through this valley. He's here. And so do you walk through it with courage and confidence, or do you walk through it with just your eyes just kind of terrified? The world looks at death in terror. Now, I'm not throwing a party for my death, but it doesn't hold power over me because I know it's not the end. The best is yet to come, so I'm not worried about that. Are we burdened and yet rejoicing? Again, all sorts of things we could work through here this morning. All I'm asking is, how are you currently living that maybe doesn't make sense to the world, but it does make sense in light of eternity? Hopefully there are ways there that we can, this is the way that I speak. This is the way that I use my resources. These are the things that I'm committed to and invested in. This is why I'm connected here and a part of this church family, because I believe in things that matter forever. Hopefully you've got things in mind that kind of track your progress throughout your week, that demonstrate that you believe the best is yet to come.